Hello and welcome to The Games Press, a podcast series in which I talk to interesting people from across the games media about their work. Except today, things are a little different. As you may already know, if you're a People Make Games patron or if you follow me over on that awful, awful social media platform belonging to the world's most embarrassing billionaire, I recently became a dad, which is bonkers, honestly. The good kind of bonkers, thankfully, but it has meant we've needed to do some juggling with our work over at PMG. And one of those bits of juggling is that Nicole Carpenter, an incredible reporter over at Polygon, has kindly agreed to take over hosting duties on the Games Press for a few episodes, starting today. I've been a massive fan of Nicole's work for years now, and I'd say, in particular, she's doing some of the best writing when it comes to covering the games industry's growing movement towards unionization. If you've not read her work, you should start by Googling The Rise of the Video Game Union. It's a big, beautiful explainer on the hows and the whys of unions in this space, and it's presented as a zine with illustrations, and you can print it off and have it as a physical object in your home, or dare I say it, your workplace. It's really fucking cool. I love it. Yeah. Anyway, I asked Nicole to pick her own guests for these episodes that she'd be hosting, as I was certain she'd come up with a bunch of interesting ideas that I might not have considered. And she's done just that, starting with Chelsea Reed Miller, a video editor from IGN, which for a start is a role that we've not explored on this show. But on top of that, Chelsea is also a spokesperson for the IGN Creators Guild, IGN's brand new union that was officially recognized by the parent company of IGN, Ziff Davis, in February. Now, the episode you're about to listen to was recorded just a week before that happened. So when you hear Chelsea talk about her hopes that Ziff Davis might voluntarily recognize this union, that's exactly what ended up happening, thanks to a great campaign by Chelsea and her colleagues, including a petition that received close to 6,000 signatures from members of IGN's audience, game workers, and peers, including me. Very happy to sign it. I also want to mention that the IGN Creators Guild has already sprung into action after management laid off 3 members of staff without consulting the union first, claiming that these layoffs were decided prior to the union being recognised, and so no bargaining was required. The Creators Guild were not having that. They ended up filing an unfair labour practice charge against Ziff Davis and called out the decision for all to see. This allowed them to go on to renegotiate those 3 layoffs with IGN's management, eventually doubling the severance pay that 2 of the affected employees received, and I quote, significantly increase the severance of the 3rd. In the words of English singer-songwriter Billy Bragg, there is power in a union. God, I'm psyched. I am gonna stop talking in just a second and finally hand over the reins to Nicole like I'm supposed to, but I should also mention that this show is supported by Loading Bar, and in fact has been since the very beginning of this show, and even before that, People Make Games has also been supported by Loading Bar. We really appreciate them. If you don't know what they are, you probably haven't already listened to the last 18 episodes, but I'll give you the spiel once again. They offer free gaming bars across the south of England, one in Hackney, one in Peckham, one where I live in Brighton, which is handy for me. And yeah, if you go in with some pals, there's a bunch of video games you can play, board games you can play. Everything's free of charge, except obviously buy some drinks and some food and support your local independent gaming establishments. That's everything from me, finally, God, which means it is actually time for Nicole Carpenter's conversation with Chelsea Reed Miller.
Hello, my name is Nicole Carpenter, and this is The Games Press. Today I'm talking to Chelsea Reed Miller, a video editor at IGN. When you think of a company like IGN, it's easy to see only the front-facing people whose faces and byline are on the site every day. It might be surprising to know just how many people are working behind the scenes to keep IGN's gaming coverage running every day. There are people editing the major stories that break on the site, people adjusting sound on IGN's many podcasts, and then there's those who, like Chelsea, work with the company's diverse video content. Well, thank you for coming on, Chelsea. This is my first time hosting a podcast. I know you have a podcast that sounds very cool. Cults, Cryptid, and Conspiracies?
Yes.
Love it. What kind of stuff do you talk about on there? It's kind of in the name, but like, is it
spooky stuff? I just did a 3-part episode on Third Man Syndrome, which is mostly experienced by people who are in dire situations. So mountain climbers, especially when they're in like life or death situations, they imagine like another person with them.
Wow.
Yeah.
I actually have never heard of that before.
It's fascinating.
Well, I'm going to have to listen immediately after this. But for the reason to have you on the podcast, I want to talk about you and the function of your job at IGN. But before we do, I'd love to talk about this big recent announcement. IGN is unionizing.
Yeah.
It's no secret that media is challenging, to say the least. Can you talk a little bit about why this is important for you and your colleagues at this moment to get together and unionize?
I think there's a lot of different reasons. One of them is something that we've talked about a lot, which is all of us really love our job. And we've kind of learned that the best time to unionize is when things are good. You want to unionize when you love your job so that you can make sure that those things that you really love about your job are codified, so that you can make sure that those things that you love are going to stay. We've been looking at a lot of layoffs that have been happening around our industry. We had our own layoffs in 2022, and we want to make sure that we have some kind of protection around that. I mean, when we had our layoffs in 2022, we noticed that the companies at Ziff Davis that were unionized did not have layoffs. And we know that unionizing doesn't mean that layoffs never happen, because such is the nature of corporate life. But it does help it so that if those layoffs do happen, you can try and protect the people who lose their jobs. You can try and make sure that they're going to be okay. And you can try and make sure that the people who stay, who aren't laid off, don't have to then pick up the jobs of three other people at their job after those layoffs happen. So it's kind of a dire time, especially in the gaming industry. And also, you know, we're coming off of two major strikes within the entertainment industry. And I feel like this is sort of the perfect time for everyone to kind of reevaluate their position at their job, how much they love their job, and how much they want to make sure that those things stay the way they are.
Right. Your point about unionizing when things are going well, like when you're loving your job, is so important, I think, because I think that from the outside, some people can see unionization. And disclosure, Polygon, where I work, we are unionized with Fox Media Union.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. And I think some people could say, oh, they're disgruntled employees, when that's not true at all, not even a little bit.
Yeah. We're very proud of the work we do. And I did listen to the episode with Reb because I love my coworker. And I think a lot of people know what our hosts and our reporters do, and what they do is incredible. But not a lot of people know what the rest of us do. And the rest of us do also love our jobs. We're just not really seen as often.
Right. And that's a great thing to go into. You know, IGN's union is called the IGN Creators Guild, right?
Yes.
And that's because it spans departments. What's the process been like to build that union that does go across plenty of different departments? Was that hard to rally everyone together, or was it really a natural thing?
There's parts of it that are easier than others. I mean, as someone who has social anxiety, having to talk to people that I'd never talked to before is definitely daunting. But I will say that this whole process has caused a lot of us to become closer than we had been before. So while initially contacting coworkers who I had never met and never talked to, and whose departments I don't usually like mesh with, was terrifying to me as someone with social anxiety. But at the end of the day, I now find it a lot easier to be able to talk to anyone I need to, even like during work. If I need to talk to someone outside my department for whatever reason, it's a lot easier to approach those people than it was before.
That's really cool. And like those sorts of reach outs, those are kind of the conversations where you're sort of feeling this out, should we unionize kind of phase? Is that what you're describing?
Yes. It's talking to people, asking them like, are you interested in unionizing? Asking people like, what do you love about your job? What do you wish was better about your job? Things like that. And then getting people together and kind of forming a union of people who also want the same things that you do. And the Creative Guild especially is built up of people who make things that the public watches or reads or retweets or what have you, which is why we call it the Creators Guild, because all of us, I feel, are deeply creative in the things that we do.
Yeah. One of my favorite parts about being in Polygon and Fox Media's union is, like you said, getting to know people who aren't in my immediate day-to-day. It's really cool to go into work and like know that some people have your back that maybe you haven't even met before. It's a really, really unique feeling and something I'm so grateful for.
Yeah.
So how's it going? You announced the union very recently. How are things going? I know the petition's still ongoing.
The petition is still ongoing. We are hoping to get voluntary recognition. Ziff Davis and IGN management has been communicative with us. We're hoping for a quick resolution. Like I said, we love our jobs. We aren't coming out the gate telling people like, fuck Ziff Davis, fuck IGN. That's not how we feel. And we know that the Ziff Davis Creators Guild, which is the other union, they were voluntarily recognized. And we're hoping for a similar outcome.
Oh, I didn't realize that the other union was voluntarily recognized. That's great. I'm crossing my fingers for y'all too.
Thank you.
So like I said before, Polygon is unionized under Box Media. So I have an understanding of like what sorts of things can be fought for in bargaining. And I'm like super grateful for our bargaining team to do that work for us. But what's on the table for IGN? Like, what are you looking to get locked down in a contract?
Work from home protections. A lot of us, especially during the pandemic, ended up working mostly from home. As someone in post-production, having to be in office every day doesn't really make sense for my position. A lot of people also ended up moving out of San Francisco and Los Angeles, which is where a majority of our employees are based. They moved on the East Coast. They moved to the South. They moved back home because it was cheaper. They wanted to be closer to family, whatever their reasons were. And we want to make sure that those people are still protected and that they can still do their jobs because they still do their jobs wonderfully, even though they're not in California with us. And we want to make sure that our duties are properly outlined for what we do for our jobs. A lot of us have kind of blurred roles, and we do love that we get to kind of go across the platform and dip our toes into different things. But we want to make sure that our duties are still sort of codified into what our job description is. And we want to make sure that everyone is fairly compensated for the work that they do, especially for being based in San Francisco and Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah. You can understand why people have moved out of Los Angeles and San Francisco because it's super expensive everywhere else. But I know it's really expensive there.
Yeah. And it's like singularly depressing for me as someone who grew up near San Francisco and then moved to Los Angeles.
The best of both worlds.
Yeah. But yeah, and then we've also talked in our mission statement about expanding our diversity within the unit. We know this space is pretty dominated by white men, especially within gaming and with entertainment. Well, we have a lot of men who are awesome, but we also have a lot of people who are not white men who are also awesome. And we want to make sure that their voices are lifted as well.
Yes, very important. And it's very cool to see those things in the works. One of the things I think I saw in the petition was about being supported in getting rest time when you work long hours. And, you know, I know that that's always a funny or not so funny thing because we cover crunch so often in the video game industry and then almost feel pressured to engage in those same practices. And I think it's so important to get that in a contract to kind of help stop that practice and so that people don't feel pressured to do that.
Yeah, there's definitely been a problem of, especially, you know, when we get into event season for summer, which, I mean, we're just wrapping up an event right now that is going live at the end of February. So it almost feels like there is no end to event season sometimes. And, you know, there's times when we're working through a weekend, for example, like Summer Game Fest or Comic-Con or Gamescom. And there are people who don't feel like they can take their time off when they get back from those things. And they should feel supported to be able to take the time off that they need to take off in order to not be burnt out, in order to be able to do their job with as much enthusiasm as they deserve.
Right. What has the response been like from IGN's readers? Have you heard a response from the readers?
Yeah, it's actually, I don't want to say like I'm shocked. I think IGN is known for being a bit of a punching bag occasionally on social media, but a majority of our readers are supportive of us. And we've always known that, but it's nice to see like when we get signatures on a petition and we get people who have said that they've been reading IGN since they were a kid and they're really happy to support us in the unionization. That's been the majority of the response that we've gotten from our readers. It's been a big response that we've gotten from people who are also in our industry that are supporting us. And it's really great to be able to see all these people coming together, especially when there are times when something goes wrong and you're trending on Twitter for the wrong reasons. It's great to see all these people come together who are the ones who read our stuff, who watch our videos, saying that they really appreciate us and they really want what's best for us. And it's great.
Right. I think you mentioned this before, but I think it's also a really cool way for the people who read and watch IGN to meet the people behind the scenes, you know? Because it gives more of an opportunity for folks like you and your other colleagues who do the very important behind the scenes work to show your face to the world.
Yeah, I love that. When we had the office in San Francisco, we used to do First Friday where we would have fans come into the office and they would get to meet people. the pandemic kind of squashed that. So unfortunately, that's not something we do anymore. But it was really fun when it was something that we were able to do, and we were able to like have a small group of fans who were able to like meet people and kind of mingle with us. And yeah, that was really cool. And this feels sort of like a digital version of that now, where we get those fans that are coming to us and saying like, I love your site. I love what you do. I'm so grateful for the 120 hours I put into Baldur's Gate 3 that you guys led me through. And it's great. I love seeing that. I love hearing those stories.
Well, so I want to talk a little bit about your job. How long have you been at IGN? And what did you do before? Did you intend to end up in games media?
That was kind of an accident. I went to college with a film degree, and I came out wanting to be an editor. So I went around and freelanced for quite a bit. And I ended up freelancing for IGN. One of my very good friends in college was at the time working at IGN and asked if I wanted to freelance for a bit. And I was like, hell yeah, I do. And then after getting the IGN job, I ended up in games media more after that, which was really funny. I moved down to Los Angeles and edited for a gaming YouTuber for a bit named Jesse Cox. And then after that, I worked on a Disney show called Player Select, which is another like gaming thing. And that just kind of accidentally happened. And in between that, I did a lot of other like non-gaming stuff too. But it was kind of funny how I kind of fell into that. And then I was freelancing all throughout the pandemic for IGN. And one of their editors left and they asked me, do you want this role? And I was like, yeah, actually, I do want that role. I'll take it.
I saw in your profile, you worked at G4 as well for a bit, or freelancing?
I did work at G4 for a bit. Right before I got hired at IGN, I was with them during the launch. Yeah, that's funny how I didn't mention that. I think it's because I was never in person. I ended up getting hired at IGN February of 2022. And I was at G4 from June 2021 to January 2022. So I was there literally pretty much just for the launch and then left. So it was a very cool thing to experience because like we launched a network, but it was also really depressing watching the people I worked with over that next year totally deteriorate. That sucked.
Yeah, it was devastating to watch as an outsider as well.
Yeah.
So I know that video editor can probably encompass a lot of different jobs and different kinds of editing. So like, what does your day-to-day look like? Like, what sort of projects are you working on?
So we have a pretty small post-production team, and we typically will get something at the beginning of the day. If it's like a review at the beginning of the day, we're sort of expected to have completed it by the end of day. So any of the reviews that we see on YouTube or on IGN's website, more than likely one of us has touched it. You know, obviously we have freelancers occasionally when we get a lot of work that we have to do, but a majority of it is done by those of us in post-production. And it depends on the kind of video you get, because there's the reviews, which have to be very carefully crafted, because you have to make sure that, one, you're not spoiling anything, because you don't want to spoil anything for people in a review. But you also have to show off everything that they're talking about to make sure, like, whether it's a good game or a bad game or a fine game, you have to make sure that anything that the reviewer is talking about is being showcased to the best of our abilities. Because sometimes it's like a reviewer will talk about something in a review and it's something that we're not allowed to show. So we have to kind of edit around that.
Our embargo restrictions, amazing.
So much fun. But we also do features, which are the most fun, I think. Not to say reviews aren't fun, they are. But features are where we get to be a bit more creative. And features can be anything from like a 5-minute quick explainer on who Deadpool is to a 40-minute long video on what happened during phase 2 of the MCU, which is something I've done.
I can imagine that's a daunting one to take on.
It is. And to the credit of the people who schedule us, which is there's our post-production supervisor, Jordan, and then there's our scheduler, Amanda, who are amazing. They try and make it so that for stuff like that, especially, we're sort of matched up with something we already know. So I did the MCU video because I have seen every Marvel film and have also read many of the comics.
So you're the perfect person for the job. Yeah, that makes sense.
So trying to pair us up as much as possible with things that we have previous knowledge of, because obviously that makes things easier. Because traditional video editing, you have all of your footage that is brought to you from set or from wherever at the end of the day. you sort it, you figure out what takes are good, what takes are bad, and you put it all together. Or if it's like a reality show, you sort everything by like, this is interesting, this isn't interesting. But with something like this, you have to go through so much stuff. I've had, again, with that MCU one, it's like you have videos that technically you have so many hours of footage to go through because you have every single movie and every single show. And the producer works with you as much as possible to find like specific moments. But a majority of a feature script is you looking at it and being like, okay, I know what they're talking about here and I know what I can show here. So that gives you a bit more creative freedom, but it also tends to take longer. So features, we like to have like a couple days, 2-3 days or more to work on those things. But it doesn't always happen like that because we do get very busy, especially with, you know, event season happens to be the same time as like summer blockbusters come out.
Right, always.
So it doesn't always work out that way, but everyone on my team does amazing work. We all have different things that we're really good at. You know, some of them are really good at making graphics and things like that too. And making sure that we're presenting this information in a way that's new, that is hopefully very interesting to someone who's watching it, especially if it's one of those longer features that we're like, we spent a lot of time on this. We really want this to do well. And making sure that even if it's something that you're kind of showing the same footage over and over again, which is something I've had because I've done a lot of those trailer breakdowns
right.
that we've done, that even if you're showing the same thing, it's still being shown in a kind of interesting way. And it, I don't want to say it sucks, but it is disheartening when I talk to other editors who are in the industry. And there have been occasions when it's like, oh, you just do internet videos. It's like, okay, well, that's sort of being very dismissive of the kind of work that I and my coworkers and other people in this industry do. And in fact, with a completely different group of editors who I adore, they've asked me like, well, how much do you work on a day? And I'll tell them, they'll be like, that is so much more work than me do.
Right. It sounds like having so much video to pull from would be so challenging. It's disappointing to hear that folks are dismissive of it like that.
I've only had a few instances of people being dismissive. And luckily, I've had way more instances of people being like, wow, that's really cool. But I think the instances of people being dismissive stand out sometimes because they're hurtful. But you know, and your coworkers know, and other people in your industry know that like you are good at your job and what you do. There's a lot that goes into what you do, even if other people don't see it.
Exactly. This happens for me as a writer too. And it's something I'm trying to work on is that the negative comments are the ones that you hear the most often too. Like people don't reach out very often when they read your article and dislike it. But you hear a lot from people who are upset and it sucks. But I know that, you know, there are thousands of other people who read that article who just didn't say anything. It feels like a similar situation there.
Yeah, I would say probably that's true.
I wanted to hear a little bit more about the review and building a video for a review. So when you're doing something like that, are you receiving like a bunch of raw footage from the reviewer from what they've played? Or is it like footage provided by the publisher? Probably a mix of both.
Yeah, there's times when we're only allowed to use footage that the publisher sends us. And there's times when we use our own footage that the reviewer usually records. It depends on the studio. It depends on the publisher. It depends on, you know, so many little different things. And we'll pull trailers. We'll pull like dev footage to make sure that, you know, we're covering everything. And sometimes it gets difficult with games that our reviewers record themselves because those tend to be the most amount of footage that we get. I didn't edit the Tears of the Kingdom review. One of our other editors did. And I cannot imagine how much footage they had and also like how much footage they weren't allowed to show.
Right.
That they
That's
had.
Coming up against the embargoes again.
Yeah. Well, and especially Nintendo. And it was like the review was great and the game was great. And it was, we all kind of came together and put out a really great video and put out a really great article. And it was awesome.
When you're scrubbing through like footage of the gameplay, like what are you looking for stuff that you mentioned the sorting, something that's good or bad, good ticks or bad ticks. I don't know what that means. But like, what are you looking for something that would be like good, catchy for a video?
Well, for takes, that's something that you do in like nonlinear editing with like scripted television and things like that. When it comes to games, a lot of times we'll just get like, here is a 4-hour video of my playthrough. Scrub through that. to figure out what's good. Like I said, for reviews, reviews are generally way more structured and their scripts are very much like, put this footage here and put this footage here. So they are a lot more structured and it's a lot easier to kind of go through that footage, because if I had to go through 4 hours of footage by myself, it would never get done because I didn't play the game. I don't necessarily know what's going on. But a lot of times I have to scrub through footage. And one of the things I'm looking for is a good sound up. So like when you're watching a review, having it broken up by sounds from the game, dialogue or a really nifty kill or whatever, making sure that you find those moments so you can stick those in, so that there's like pauses in the VO to make sure that it still flows correctly. And then also looking for anything that like visually, a majority of the time as someone who has not played the game, looking for something visually that like catches my eye as someone who has not played the game and may want to see that in a review. So for filling in those holes that maybe necessarily aren't covered by what the reviewer is saying, like put this piece of footage here.
Right. It's a good point about having that eye from someone who hadn't played the game to fill in those gaps. As someone who does reviews, like I feel like I can get like a really narrow focus and focus in on like the parts that were so interesting to me. But there's, you know, so much more to the game, obviously.
Yeah. And it's great. And we get to have that like second set of eyes as someone who hasn't played the game to come in and be like, well, this actually looks really interesting. Like, am I allowed to put this in the video? Because you got to make sure you're not breaking embargo.
Right. Yep. Do you have any particular videos of any kind that you've worked on for IGN that like you're particularly proud of? Something that came out really cool?
So here's the thing. Our post-production manager asks us this question like every month or so. We'll ask us like, hey, let me know, like tell the group what's an edit that you particularly are proud of for this month. And I'm always like, I don't remember what I did. there was a point last year where we were doing a story so far, which is basically like just a video recap for The Witcher. And we had already done a video for season 2. So we were putting one out for season 3. So we just had to add a couple of more things in there. And I was like, man, if I had the project file from the last editor who did this, it would make this really easy. Like, I wonder who did it. And it was me. And I just did not remember that I had done this video before. And I was like, oh my God, really? I mean, the trailer breakdowns are fun. I just did one for Avatar. That was really fun. As someone who like loved that cartoon when I was younger, that was really fun to do, to go through the live action trailer. The aforementioned phase 2 MCU video, which was long, but also like, I love Marvel. So
right.
God, we've done a few like stories so far that are fun to work on, especially when it's for something that you know really well. Like I said, it's like, we'll get one video every day or every other day. So there's a lot of videos out there. And some of them are like previews for games that are coming out, which tend to be a bit more straightforward because it's like we have very minimal footage that we have that we're allowed to show for a preview. Right. So just put that up. And then there's things that are way more involved. I think I did a video for Halloween last year that was scariest kids movie villains or something like that, which was quite a blast from the past because it went through like the Ferngully villain. I love that movie as a kid.
I love that movie too.
Yeah. But then there was a movie I had never seen before and it was Return to Oz, which like everyone else was like, oh, that horrified me as a child. I'm like, I did not watch this as a kid and I'm so glad I didn't. This looks terrifying. But yeah, like things like that are always fun. I'm working on a video right now. I'm not going to say exactly what it is.
That's okay.
But it was supposed to be out today and it just like, it wasn't ready in time, but it's like a romance thing. And that's also a lot of fun.
Oh, I love doing romance stuff. I love Valentine's Day as someone in media because we get to do so many fun jokes about smooching.
Yeah, we pass them around. I think a Valentine I saw today that I sent to my coworker because I knew she'd love it was, I think, from like the Oklahoma Department of Wildlife, which is a great Twitter. And it was just a picture of a wolf. And it said like, hey, Loka, like as Twilight reference.
Amazing.
I was like, I don't know why, but this is exactly the kind of Valentine that I want.
Yes, for everyone listening at home, we are recording on Valentine's Day. So smooching and Twilight and all that.
I have a new appreciation for Twilight. I hated it when it came out. I ended up having to read all of them for my podcast. Because
Oh, really?
Yeah, we also, for a little while, we were reading supernatural romance novels and reviewing them. So we did all of Twilight. And I got really upset because we read the book that had come out fairly recently that was like Twilight, but from Edward's perspective. And I was upset because I'm like, this book is actually written well and I'm angry about it.
Was it the same writer? I didn't read that one. Yes.
Yeah.
Fascinating. I didn't even know there was a Twilight from Edward's perspective.
Yeah. And you'll just be angry about how much better written it is.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to have to seek it out now. And similarly, it's been so long since I've read the books, but I was obsessed with the books when they came out. So
yeah, I was obsessed with Harry Potter.
Oh, same.
It's not that I regret being obsessed with Harry Potter. It's that I have a lot of trans friends and it feels icky now and it sucks.
I agree. I have a Harry Potter tattoo. Don't know what to do with that. Oh, yeah. So it's weird to have now.
Yeah, it is.
I'm glad we could bond over that. It's not something I talk about very often.
Sorry, I have a bigger tattoo for Discworld and I don't have to be ashamed of that one.
I wanted to ask you, what's the most satisfying part of your job for you? Like what part of video editing is like, yeah, I like that a lot.
My favorite part is like listening, because a majority of what we do is done with VO and then we put footage on top of it. And my favorite thing is when I'm listening to a piece of VO and I think in my head, I know exactly what I want to put there. And then when I get the feedback of like, this was perfect, holy shit, that's the best part.
Yes.
Because like, there will be stuff like when someone on the VO is talking about like, God, swinging into action is so dumb, but like something like that. And then being able to like find like the perfect piece of media from Spider-Man to emphasize it, which is a dumb comparison. And it's not something I don't think I've ever done, but it's stuff like that. It's like, there's not a specific piece that needs to go here. I just think it would be really fun to emphasize this line with this piece of media and put it in there. And especially it's a really fun when it's like, there's a line in a movie or something. And it was definitely something for the MCU. And I don't remember exactly what it was, but basically they were talking, it was someone was talking about not appreciating certain aspects of the MCU as much as they should. And I inserted the line from Wanda from Doctor Strange, that doesn't seem fair. So being able to do stuff like that is a lot of fun. Being able to kind of play with media in that way is a lot of fun. This didn't end up happening, but when Tears of the Kingdom came last year, we were all brainstorming like, what kind of videos do we want to do? What kind of social posts do we want to do? And I pitched, but ultimately, like, I don't think we were able to like figure out a way to do it. I pitched doing a short social video to Dumb Ways to Die and having it match with like different ways that Link has died in Tears of the Kingdom. I think the problem with that is we weren't sure if we were able to use that song.
Right. That's a great idea, though. I'm singing it in my head. I see it happening.
So stuff like that is always really fun. We have a show called Super Debatable, which I think is on hiatus right now. But it's a lot of fun. And it's two of our hosts, Akeem and Joshua, who are debating like certain aspects of mostly like entertainment stuff. I think it's like all entertainment stuff. And there was a bit where I decided to kind of have fun with it. And Joshua was on a rant and I like faded him out and zoomed in on Akeem and had like the numbers going around his head and stuff.
Yeah.
And one of my producers like clipped that bit and started sending it around to everyone being like, I died laughing at this bit. And I love that. It was just like something I thought of that I thought would be really funny. And they were like, yes, this is perfect. So those kind of little editorial decisions that you get to make as a video editor are a lot of fun.
And they make such a huge difference when you're watching the video too. It's like the impact of something like that is massive.
Yeah, that's what we hope when we do stuff like that.
When you were talking about being able to listen to the script and know exactly like what to pull in from video, it really clicked to me. It's like to do this job that you do well, you have to have such a huge, even just like personal knowledge bank library of media, it sounds like.
I joke a lot. For example, I am not the biggest DC fan. I did grow up watching Batman, the animated series, and Batman Beyond. So I've always kind of had a soft spot for Batman. My dad's a huge Superman fan. And I think just out of spite, I was like, no. And I love my dad. I just thought it was fun. But also like when I was a kid, like that's when like X-Men was also coming out. So I gravitated more towards Marvel because of that. But I joke that it's like for someone who's not a DC fan, I have such a huge knowledge of DC stuff because of like everything I've had to do. There are shows I have never watched that I still could tell you beat for beat what happens in them because I had to do videos on them. Like a lot of that kind of stuff. It's like, I'm not necessarily a fan of this thing, but I know a lot about it because I ended up having to do a video for it. So I ended up having to know a lot of things about it just so I could get this video done.
You really get things spoiled for you too, I bet.
You do. Again, are the people who schedule us try and be cognizant of like, if you don't want to be spoiled about something, then we'll put someone else on this. So there's been a couple times that I'm like, please don't put me on this Marvel review. I don't want to be spoiled for the movie. But then there's like other times when it's like someone else doesn't want to be spoiled for something. And I'm like, I don't care. A lot of games I don't necessarily mind being spoiled for because I don't think it takes away from my enjoyment of playing the game. With the exception of Zelda. I never, even though it's like pretty formulaic, even with the new format, I'm like, I know what's going to happen, but I still don't want to be spoiled because I love this game so much.
I worked a little bit with Zelda videos when the game came out, before it came out, watching like clips so that we can like glean what we were going to cover. Just,
yeah.
So I wasn't working with the videos. I was watching videos from before and I just loved it. I was like, I'm watching this game. I can't wait to play it. And I mostly loved though, like going in and be able to like solve puzzles immediately and like impress my husband who's like, wow, you're so smart. Like, how did you know how to do that? I'm like, well, I don't know. But secretly, I've like watched that video like at least 4 times. And that's how I know.
There's like a couple of games that I enjoy that I've never personally played. One of them is the 2018 God of War. I own it. I've never played it because I've watched other people play it so often for different things. I've played Ragnarok. I got that one. But I love the story because I also, my degree is actually in screenwriting.
Oh, awesome. That's so cool.
So my favorite games are like games with a good story. And like my husband and I mostly have like pretty much the same thoughts on gaming, but he also will play stuff with his friends that I'm like, I'm not really, like he used to play Rainbow Six with his friends. I'm like, I'm not interested in that stuff. I'm way more interested in games that have any kind of storyline, which is I think why I could never get into Dark Souls, but also because I suck at gaming and can't get past like the first 5 minutes.
Yeah, I couldn't even play Elden Ring because I just like could not stand how hard it was.
Yeah.
Look, I don't want things to be easy, but like I also don't need it to be that hard.
There's times that I'm like, screw it. I want to play in story mode. I don't want to have to like fight for what I'm doing. I just want to experience the story. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I get that like Dark Souls and Soulsborne games are like that and they have a huge following. And like, I did play Elden Ring and I did like it. I found it a lot easier to play than Bloodborne, which I own and have never been able to beat the first 5 minutes of. I've watched other people play it. I know that there's like a big story there. I don't understand it. It looks real pretty and it's a lot of fun to watch other people play. I can't do it. But I want to also be able to change difficulty settings. There's like Spider-Man, I play intermediate or whatever the mid-level is. But there was a couple times that I'm like, I'm so sick and tired of doing this fight. Just put it in the easiest mode so I can get through it. Like,
right.
I've never pretended to be a good gamer.
You don't have to be. It's like such a non-issue. It blows my mind when it gets blown up. Before I let you go, I wanted to hear a little bit about doing video editing for YouTube or like gaming YouTubers. How does that differ from what you're doing now? Or does it differ?
It does. So for gaming YouTubers, like there's not really VO, obviously, because it's just you're posting a video of them playing a game. So there's a lot of videos where it's like you're not even really editing. You're just posting it. You're trimming the head and the tails and putting it up on YouTube and putting the intro and the outro in. There are some videos that I did that was a lot of fun where I would take the like hours and hours of footage of, you know, playing a full playthrough of a game and try and condense it down into like 2 hours so that people can just like watch a 2-hour video of like the story beats and the funny moments of the playthrough and things like that. It's different because it's those full playthroughs of those games. Whereas at IGN, we don't really do Let's Plays
right.
and things like that. So that opportunity doesn't really come up. And the only really thorough line between like working for a gaming YouTuber and working at IGN is literally that they do both involve games. Because other than that, the type of editing is very different. And I definitely have more fun with my IGN videos. Not that there's anything wrong with YouTube gamers. I watch them myself. They're a lot of fun. It's just not really a challenging edit to me personally. But that's not to say that there are other editors who do a lot more and feel differently than I do.
Yeah, the Let's Play format doesn't give a lot of wiggle room there.
Yeah. It's like straightforward, like here's the game, here's them playing the game. And occasionally, like when I did work for the gaming YouTuber, when I worked for Jesse, I would get to insert like little jokes and things like that. We had one Let's Play It in 2017 at IGN that I tried to do that with. And I remember my manager coming up and being like, this is really funny. We can't post any of this. I was like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. Do you remember what the joke was?
It was they were playing Mario Odyssey and they kept dying. And so I posted them dying and kept playing the song, like the What You Say song over and over again. So that was deemed not appropriate for YouTube for like many reasons, but it was still funny.
It's funny. Yeah. I was, when you were talking about editing for the Let's Plays, I was thinking again about like being able to add in those visual sort of jokes and I guess sound jokes too. And I love that. It's such
it's fun.
Unique skill.
Yeah. And it's like with the show I did for Disney, which was Player Select, and a lot of the stuff that I do, like we get to do for IGN, it also hinges a lot on being able to do light motion graphics work. Like not VFX, because that's insane, but being able to like mask out a background to make a funny joke or things like that. Being able to create your own transition for those features that are for like specific holidays or things like that. And that's a lot of fun too. I like working with After Effects, so.
Yeah. Where do you learn those skills? Like, do you just have to learn on the job?
So when I went to college, everyone was using Final Cut 7. And then I left college and no one was using Final Cut 7 anymore. And that's kind of the problem with editing programs is like they update so often that even if you learned it in school, and like, that's the thing. It's like we used that in school, but there wasn't really a lot of teaching how to use it. It was more like teaching the concepts of editing and things like that. It changes so often that that's almost like useless. Personally, I have a Los Angeles library card that I can use on Lynda that I make sure to watch like videos and updates and things like that. And it's a lot of just teaching yourself how these things work, which unfortunately does lead itself to like, there's been times when we'll all get together, like post-production, we'll get together for like events and things like that. We'll all be in the same room. And one of us will do something and the other one will be like, wait, that's a thing you can do? Because when you teach yourself, there's a lot of things that you miss. So it's always good to like come together and talk and be like, oh, that's how you can do this easier. That's crazy.
It's really wild. My husband is a quote unquote power user for Adobe Illustrator.
Oh my God.
When I watch him do stuff on there, I watch him and I'm like, you're doing magic. What you are doing there is magic that I can never do.
I don't understand Illustrator. I've used it to export stuff that I need for motion graphics for After Effects. And that is the extent of my knowledge. And I know that like I've got friends and family that have told me like the what you do in After Effects is magic or what you do in Premiere is magic.
Right,
and I'm like,
right.
I don't see it that way because I know it so well. But then I look at someone in like Photoshop or Illustrator and I'm like, that's just straight up magic. I don't know how that works.
Yeah, it's so funny. It's such a good reminder, though, to like reframe it and to just appreciate our skills. And
yeah,
it's really cool. And I guess it's a good place to wrap up, too. It's been so eye-opening to learn about what you do on the video team, because you mentioned this before, is like you see like the faces and the bylines on the website, and it can be easy to forget like just how many people are at IGN making it work behind the scenes. From what I understand, you have a quite a large staff and like people work so hard there and do such an incredible job. And there's such a wealth of knowledge that goes on to put these stuff up there.
Yeah. And we're happy to all come together to have this union now that we're all like working on together. And since we're wrapping up, we would very much appreciate if everyone can follow our Twitter, which is at IGN Union, and then it's the same at IGN Union on Instagram. And that's where we will be posting any kind of updates that we have on getting recognized and then contract negotiations, anything like that. And we would love your support. Tell me the stories of you reading IGN as a kid, because I love that.
I love it too.
Yeah, thank you so much.
One of the last things, I freelanced at IGN at the beginning of my career. So,
oh,
Yes. And I just thought the people there were so incredible. And I'm so happy for you guys. I know personally how hard everyone works there from seeing it just on just a little tiny sliver from the freelance side. And I'm so, so happy for you all.
We love our freelancers. There are quite a few freelancers that we work with so often that I talk to them like all the time. It's so great. I love them.
Yeah, it's really cool. Well, thank you so much. Where can people find your podcast too?
That's at C3 Podcast. Thank you for letting me come on and talk about our union that we're so stoked about. It's so exciting. And yeah, this has been great. I love talking about games. This has been awesome.
I know. It's so fun. It's like, who knew having a podcast would be not as scary as I thought.
It's fun. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Games Press. I hope you enjoyed hearing Nicole's take on the format. I certainly did. She's just so immediately genuinely enthusiastic about what people want to talk about. Great trait in an interviewer. And yeah, if you'd like to support this show and the rest of our work at PMG, head over to patreon.com/peoplemakegames. Cheers. Thank you.